So welcome to the Demand and Ops Unboxed podcast. I had to think about it because it's changed. Today I'm joined by Ali Lilly from SmartBug. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Travis. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. Excited about this conversation. We've got a lot of great topics. And before we kick it off, can you share a little bit about what you do at SmartBug and how you got up to that? Because I think you said that you've been on the ground floor of all three revenue departments. So like, what do you do at SmartBug? And talk a little bit about the ground floors.
Yeah, definitely. So currently, I am a business development executive at SmartBug. I was recruited by our leadership team to be one of the first sales team members that was going to kick off our outbound sales organization. Historically, we had been 100% inbound. And recently, we decided that we wanted to do a little bit more aggressive account-based marketing and sales by identifying target accounts we really wanted to go after and sending out business development executives to engage those accounts with the help of marketing and then close deals. So that's currently what I do. Prior to this sales role, I worked on our client services team as a strategist, leading client accounts, helping clients that I worked with hit their revenue goals. And then prior to that, I was an assistant to our strategists, and we call that a specialist. So I started at SmartBug and have worked in marketing by way of doing that for our clients, client services, because I was in client services, and now sales. So every single revenue department at our company, I have worked in.
So with working at all three revenue departments, it puts you in a unique situation working at an agency, right? And how have you found that to be? Like, have you noticed that you're relied on more because you have all of that experience? Or how has that impacted what you're doing now?
Yeah, I would say every experience that I've had has only made me better at the current job that I'm doing. So the more exposure I've gotten to, especially now being in a sales position, what my day-to-day priorities are and how I spend my time and what my individual goals are when it comes to closing deals, knowing what that feels like and knowing what it feels like to get leads from marketing versus trying to go out and get leads myself, and the two different processes you have to follow to close deals from those two different types of leads is really, really insightful because prior to being on sales, I only knew what was happening on one side of the SQL to a certain extent. And now I'm able to see what's happening on the other side of it and all that goes into the sales process and what makes a lead qualified, what makes it not qualified. Figuring that out, even as a salesperson, after marketing has flagged someone as qualified or after you've done research and think someone could be qualified. So that's been very helpful. And then honestly, I think my experience working with our customers has helped me a lot as well, because I was on the ground. I think I've worked with probably 10 to 15 different clients at SmartBug and did a lot of marketing campaigns for many different types of businesses. Some were successful, some were unsuccessful. Got to see trends across all of the companies that I worked with. And really, the thing that I took away the most was that marketing and sales alignment are so incredibly important. And now that I see that is really the underlying problem that so many of our clients struggle with, I'm able to talk to that in our sales process. And I know that will resonate because I saw it happen with so many of my customers.
Yeah. And I think that's a great segue into kind of the next topic. And I saw earlier today, before we hit record, we were talking about Refine Labs and Chris Walker. And he posted something today, and I believe he said that 66% of revenue teams or sales teams will not hit their KPIs this year. why do you think alignment's so poor, and how have you seen companies fix that, I guess?
Well, it makes sense that 60% are not going to hit their revenue goals this year because we've had quite a year macroeconomically. There has been so much trepidation around what is going to happen with the economy that no matter what industry you are in, people are more hesitant to buy than they would be if the outlook on the economy was better. So that's number one, like totally get why so many people are in that position. When rough times happen in the economy, teams that are not aligned struggle more than teams that are aligned. And really, the way that I've helped my customers get aligned is bringing them all into the room and asking them questions about what is your process for bringing in new leads? What does that look like for the buyer? And what are the things that the marketing team is doing to bring those people in? At what point do you pass someone off to sales? And then sales team, what does your process look like? And what are the steps that buyers take to become a customer? And it's amazing by just asking those simple questions and getting everyone in the room and talking about that, I've been able to outline, okay, well, it sounds like there are some inefficiencies in the handoff process, or it sounds like we're not all on the same page about what makes a qualified lead. And then we get on the same page about all of those things, and then we set up the systems in HubSpot to be able to track all of that. So every time that I've struggled with alignment, it really just all goes back to having a conversation with leadership and moving from there.
Are most of the clients or the people who come to you looking for help, would you say that most of them suffer an alignment problem?
Yes, I would say probably upwards of 80 to 90% suffer from marketing and sales alignment. And now that I've done, and customer success alignment, honestly, and now that I've done all three jobs, you know, I've served customers, I've done marketing, and now I'm selling, it makes sense because even though the overarching goal is the same to drive revenue for the business, the day-to-day priorities of each of those teams are very different. For example, sales is really all about more, it's more so about short-term thinking of what is the best way to spend my time to close deals quickly? And who are my hottest leads right now? And what can I be doing right now to talk to those people and move them forward in my pipeline? So it's very what is happening right now in this moment and how can I capitalize on that to close deals? There's a lot of research that goes into closing deals and some more longer term stuff as well. But generally, that is your mindset is what are my hottest leads and how can I talk to them and get meetings with them and get them in my pipeline? On the marketing side, it's much longer term and thinking. You're essentially bringing people, strangers, into your website through content and introducing them to your brand, educating them on problems they may have and warming them up to be able to be ready to pass to sales. And that is a very slow process. And you're not thinking super short term of like, what can I do right now to generate revenue right now? Like you would be on the sales side. And then on the customer success side of things, it's a combination of long-term and short-term thinking. And depending on how well your business does and how happy you're keeping your customer, you need to leverage both types of thinking at any given moment. So your priority is always keeping customers happy. But beyond just keeping them happy, you're trying to also add value so they continue to see the value and so they continue to see the point of working with you. And you're not really concerned about getting new revenue. You're more concerned about how do I retain this revenue that I have and not lose it. And so I think So based on those three different day-to-day priorities, it's no wonder why teams are aligned. Everyone is in a position to drive revenue, but the way they do it differs a lot.
How do you run into instances where, you know, you have this data, you've seen that better aligned teams weather economic storms, they probably grow faster even if there isn't a down economy. And knowing that and educating clients about that, do you still get resistant from people about how you propose that they align?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's always, if you've been doing something a certain way for a long time, and a lot of times this happens with the sales team. I see it all the time where there's a certain set of sales representatives that are bringing in a lot of money for the business, and they are extremely successful individual contributors, but they're lone wolves. And it's not because they don't log things in the CRM, leaders are not able to understand what makes them so successful and train the rest of the team on that. So you end up getting a huge discrepancy between a few of your salespeople doing really well and others not so well, and not being able to train up the people that are not doing so well for longer term revenue growth. And a lot of people are just okay with having their superstars do the lion's share of the work and relying on them quarter over quarter. So if you don't really want to change that, and you're not thinking, if you stay in that short-term sales mindset of like, what is the MRR that's forecasted to come in this month? If you're not going outside of that and thinking about longer-term revenue growth for the business, then that's typically the people that I get resistance from.
Yeah. And they're just going to be on a treadmill.
Totally.
For the rest of, for eternity. Can't get off
totally
when you're so short-term focused.
Yeah, exactly.
And speaking of kind of a old school mentality, I guess, lead gen versus demand gen, are you seeing a shift in people coming to you and thinking about things in more of a long-term, wanting help in creating and capturing demand versus just generating leads? Or what kind of trends have you seen there or have not seen there lately?
Yeah, it's interesting because I would say this year, it was really, really hard to sell long-term. Long-term growth this year was not something people were interested in, especially after Q1 and Q2, because so many people were behind on their revenue goals. And rather than just beating a dead horse and talking about how inbound grows over long term, we really leaned into talking about sales enablement and account-based marketing and sales to use both teams to bring in revenue quicker. So with sales enablement, it's essentially arming your sales team with the content they need to move conversations quicker and have better, higher quality conversations. If you have materials that address a lot of common concerns that you hear on sales calls, and you can pull that up at a moment's notice, that's going to help you get over a hump with a sales conversation that previously you maybe had to say, hey, that those are all good questions. Let me take some time offline to put something together for you and send it to you within a week. You're going to lose people. And so we've found that by educating sales teams on the power of marketing, that we've helped people increase their sales qualified leads quicker. Another example within account-based marketing is we've been switching from doing passive marketing lead nurtures to more proactive outbound sequence nurtures as follow-ups to inbound content. For example, we've seen a lot of success getting meetings on the calendar after a webinar when we set up a sequence for a sales team, and every email in the sequence talked about points related to the webinar and added value by offering something else like an audit or a free consultation that was related to the topic of the webinar. And other, in addition to just having those emails sent out, we would also have the sales team call down on people that opened and clicked those emails. And I like to call it warm calling, because you're calling based on open rates and click rates and interactions that you've already seen these people take, and set meetings through those phone calls. We've seen that be hugely successful for teams. So that was how we combined, you know, we used some of the magic of inbound content and added on an outbound layer to it to get meetings on the calendar quicker. And we found that that was a lot more successful than trying to just continuously sell people on long-term inbound marketing, because this year people just, they needed sales and they needed help doing that. So we just basically automated sales outreach in an intelligent way to get meetings on the calendar.
Nice. Yeah, I think that's a highly effective strategy. And you mentioned webinars, events. Have you found that that is still a pretty effective way of at least starting conversations or building awareness, or are there other things this year that have taken over kind of webinars and become more effective at building that awareness and engagement?
From what I've seen, webinars are still highly effective. I think because there is so, like I would say back in 2017, when ebooks and guides and white papers were new, or maybe it's even before 2017, there wasn't a lot of that content out there. When you would send that to people, they would engage with it. And that has just become commonplace now. And really what engages people is being able to have a human-to-human interaction, or as close as that as you can get, like a webinar. And I think while ebooks and white papers are super important, I think that getting a person in front of somebody is the best way to bring them in. And then you can follow up with more data once they're listening to you. So I still see webinars and events being highly effective. Honestly, usually for every client that I've worked with, webinars have been the highest performing in terms of lead generation, quality and quantity.
Nice. And how are they going about building the content or determining what are they going to have a webinar about? How are they coming up with those topics?
Yeah. So this kind of relates to our overall topic of bringing the three departments together, because it's really about talking to customer success and understanding what are the things that customers are concerned about right now? What are things that you're hearing every day? What are things happening in the market that you're aware of that we can address? And taking the points that your customer success team has flagged as important topics and building your webinars around that.
Nice. And how are they typically promoting the webinars? Are they doing a mix of social and email, or, you know, how are they finding kind of net new and building awareness with people who may not?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of all the different channels. So at SmartBug, we try to identify what channels your audience is most likely to engage in. So what we've seen lately is LinkedIn and social media have been a highly effective channel for attracting B2B customers. It has really taken off, I would say, in the past year as a place where there's a lot of knowledge sharing, a lot of energy and excitement. And we found that just from organic posts in LinkedIn, that has driven a lot of people to webinars. And beyond that, you know, email marketing still works very well. What we're seeing across all our clients, when done right, there's nothing worse than a crappy email. And we try to hone in on, okay, how can we build our audience and our list as accurately as possible and understand what is really going to pull them in terms of content, and then make sure we're delivering emails around that. High quality emails with good information still work. It's when you don't do your research about your buyers and you don't have interesting things that resonate them that email marketing doesn't work. And then beyond that, really leveraging intent-based advertising. So traditional advertising on LinkedIn, Google, that's great. And that fits for a lot of people. But sometimes for super niche audiences or highly technical audiences, it's not enough to reach who you're trying to reach. For example, I had a client that was a global medical device manufacturer, and the people that they were trying to talk to were PhDs and scientists and physicians. And those people weren't relying on Google to answer their questions about how to do their job. And so they're reading case studies, reading academic studies on different websites to get their information. And so Rollworks allowed us to place advertisements on the websites, those types of websites where we knew they were going. So we've seen that be extremely helpful as well.
Nice. And using something like Rollworks, how reliable would you say their intent data is, and how helpful is it? Do you think it really makes a difference when you're trying to target certain companies as being, you know, in market, or is it still kind of a crapshoot to some degree?
I think that it's one part of a larger account-based marketing promotion strategy. So it's very helpful in putting ads on places where they have never been before and getting people to your website to at least get a baseline level of awareness about who you are. But you can't just rely on that alone. You need other channels as well to really drive lead generation. So it's one piece of a much larger puzzle. The thing that is helpful is they have like lead scoring that tells you if someone is unaware, aware, engaged, and you can pass that data to your sales team. So while yes, there are a lot of people that are unaware, it tells you who those people are, and so you don't spend your time on them.
Nice. You mentioned lead scoring. I've got to get your take on this. What are your feelings about building lead scoring in HubSpot? Because I have a love-hate relationship.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Lead scoring in HubSpot is not always the easiest. I've done many different types of lead scoring for different clients over the years. Some has worked well, some have not, and it's all been in HubSpot. Recently, the lead scoring model that I've found the most helpful as a salesperson, because that's essentially what lead scoring is for, is how do I tell what are my hottest leads, is a negative lead scoring model, which tells you who are my hottest leads right now at this very moment. So it adds points for recency and subtracts points for the longer you go between not engaging in marketing content. And it can be difficult to set up in HubSpot, but we have two people here that are wizards at doing that. And they actually use it for they took a model that they built for a client, and they also use it for our internal team here. And so I every day get MQLs with a certain lead score. And yes, I have to do some funneling out of people where I'm like, okay, that's not a good fit. But it has been helpful in terms of, okay, these people are hotter right now. I'm going to send them some outreach, and I'm going to give myself about 2 weeks to set a meeting with them. And if I can't set a meeting within 2 weeks, then I'm going to pass them back to marketing to nurture. And I would say out of, I don't know, I've gotten probably 5 or 6 meetings from doing that over the past 3 months. So it is working for me.
Nice. I think my biggest thing with HubSpot's lead scoring is the lack of a built-in decay. And how do you prevent it from going too far negative to where you might have somebody who becomes more active, but they're not hitting thresholds because they were so far negative. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm not 100% sure, but I do know that we have different point allocations for different marketing assets. So if someone is super negative, but all of a sudden they interact with a case study, that's going to add 100 points versus just if they interact with like a blog or open one more email, it will add 10 points. So to my knowledge, that's how we're trying to combat that. But I have seen what you're talking about, and it is tricky.
Yeah, I almost wish that HubSpot would put a floor in that it can't go below zero, because I think if someone's zero, there's zero. And they should go to zero and then like start over, right?
Yeah. And
I think that would help in a lot of ways. It's always been a challenge to really get it right too, because every client website is different. The way people interact with it is different. Their content, things they offer are different. And so like coming up with that scoring formula can be challenging. It takes a lot of time and trial.
It does. Yes, 100%. It's definitely not something that you can just set it and forget it. It takes constant updating. And back to our topic of alignment between sales and marketing, it takes constant feedback from the sales team. Is this working or not? A lot of times sales is quick to point out a lot of flaws. But what's actually more helpful is when you point out when something works, because then they know, okay, we want to do more of this. So I try whenever I get meetings from the leads that have been scored and passed over to me, and I put them in a sequence and now I am talking to them, I always try to call that out so that our team can go and look back at into the data and see, okay, what was the path that this specific person took and how can we make sure that this happens more frequently?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just something I think that you have to just set the expectations with the client going in, like, hey, this is not a set it and forget it. It's going to take a lot of testing, a lot of iteration, and to really get it dialed in.
Yes.
And then pivoting to, you've mentioned customer success, and you've been in customer success. What's the difference between customer success and customer service? And why do you think a lot of people think that they're the same?
Yep. Yeah. So customer success is continuously adding value to your partnership with the customer. And customer service is completing tasks when asked and having more of an order taker and fulfiller mindset versus a value add mindset.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I think, customer service is more reactive, right? You're just waiting for problems to come in to solve.
Yes.
And I feel like more companies still lean more on customer service than customer success. And
definitely.
Do you think that there should be a shift, or should companies have both? Or if you can't have both, should you really lean into customer success?
Yeah. I mean, I've worked with clients and it's so easy to fall into the customer service lane. It's so easy because, I mean, especially if you're like me and a people pleaser and you want to make people happy, like your instinct is to just do what they say. And oftentimes we think that just doing what someone says is going to make them happy and see the value that you're bringing to the table. But that's really not the case. They've partnered with your company for a reason, because you can do something that they can't. And if they could just tell someone, do this, and then they would just do it. They would just have an internal team do that and they wouldn't hire you to tell them any differently. So I think that that's really the key.
And I think one kind of parting question, 2023 has been the year of AI. I think that's how it will be remembered, of grinded out sales and AI. What, in talking with a lot of clients, like you do. What do you think 2024 will be about?
Yeah, I think 2024 is going to be about leveraging AI for efficiency. I think that we all got an introduction this year to the power of it and also the way that it needs to be managed and helped to deliver the highest value. And I think that over the next year, people are going to be learning all of that and learning how to harness it to get results and to do things quicker. Honestly, imagine how much revenue we could all generate if we just saved an hour of our day every day. And the fact that AI can help you do that, that is extremely powerful. So it's painful to figure out how to use up front. It takes a lot of patience. And I talk to my partner all the time who's super, he's super into AI and like all about it. And I tell him, like, it's so painful for me to use. I have to like do so much thinking up front when I feel like I could just write this myself way quicker. And he's always like, yes, yeah, it is, but it's worth the time because the next time you go to do that same thing, you're not going to have to tell it what to do. It's going to already know. So it's short-term pain for long-term gain. And I think that the people that stick with the pain in the beginning of 2024 are really going to start to see its benefits next year and leverage it and drive revenue quicker than anyone else could.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's been how it's unfolded over the course of the year, that came on so fast. And I love technology, but sometimes if something comes in too fast and hot, I'm just like, okay, let's let the hype settle down and let it smooth into what can this really do besides just the bells and whistles and cool nuances of it. How can this really help me besides just being something cool to play with? And I feel like at that phase, like you said, become more efficient. And I am a writer. I wrote a book. I like the creative process, but I hate copywriting. I absolutely hate it. Loathe it. Because I feel like I'm not good at it. And so for like these podcasts, the clips that I produce from them, it's been a blocker for me because I'm like, oh, I've got to like now describe this clip and I've got to create a LinkedIn post about the clip and YouTube, I've got to describe the episode and just like, it's all there. Like, just listen, find out what it's about. Right. But I've been using AI to do all of that faster, knowing that, and it's also gotten me to be more comfortable with like these things, this copy for my podcast description, it doesn't have to be written to win a Pulitzer Prize. It's just a simple summary. And so I've gotten away and disconnected from seeking perfection to just say, hey, it's just a summary. Like people barely read them. They just want to scan it, right? And so I've just taken that mentality. I'm like, okay, I'll go and I'll take the transcript from my podcast or from a clip. I'll throw it into ChatSpot and I'll say, summarize this. Summarizes it. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty good. I'll tweak some things. I never copy paste as is, but at least gets me started to be like, okay, yeah, that's what it's about. But this isn't how I would say that. Here's how I would say that. And then I put it in. It just like saves me so much time.
Yes.
Gets me past that resistance. So.
Yes, I'm 100% on the same page. I feel like AI is perfectionistic procrastinator's best friend. You know, honestly, people procrastinate because they're trying to be perfect about everything. And I have definitely done that. And AI really just helps you get started. And I feel like that's the key to everything, right? It's like Nike says, it's just do it. Yeah. Just get started. Just take one step toward your goal and you're going to be way further ahead than people who are still procrastinating and just have it all in their head and not on paper.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think this week alone, I've done a lot more editing and things of podcasts again this week. And I wake up super early, like ridiculously early. And for all summer, I felt like I'd get up early and I'm not that as productive as I used to be. And then I'd say within the last couple of weeks, by the time it's time for me to go up and like get my kids dressed and breakfast and do all the things I have to do in the morning before work. I go upstairs because I'm in the basement. My office is down in the basement. I go upstairs into the sunlight and I'm like, man, I feel like I got a lot done. And I'm leveraging AI more and ChatSpot and ChatGPT to like create more efficiencies, do the things that I don't want to do, but need to do. And I know that it doesn't need to be perfect. Just do it. And so yeah, I think, I've noticed just in the last couple of weeks that it's really starting to help me get more done quicker and at least get started in things that I just would put off. So yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That's key.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I've slowly started to notice the same things. One of my things that I would say enjoy the least out of what I do is doing my call downs on leads and then sending follow-up emails after. And I haven't yet figured out how to make AI talk for me. So I do make the phone calls, but the follow-up email process has significantly shortened with the help of ChatGPT because I'm able to say, give it a few points and then plug in like something about this company. And then it gives me a follow-up email in a second and then I send it off. So I'm right there with you. I think it's going to be super exciting to see how people continue to use it. And it's going to be a necessity, honestly. If you're not using it, you're falling behind. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And one piece of content that I started doing before Inbound, because I feel like HubSpot started pushing out a lot of new stuff ahead of Inbound. And I was stumbling across things that I was seeing for the first time and figuring it out. And I figured that people would be interested in that. So I created several Loom videos, like how to of like, hey, here's this new thing. Here's how you use it. But I also know that people in a how to want to also just read it and follow the instructions, like in HubSpot's knowledge base, like step 1, 2, 3, and not watch a video, you know? And so what I've been doing is record the Loom, take that transcript, and then I'll just say, make this easier to read. I won't tell them to rewrite it, but I'll say, make it easier to read. And they'll take it and they'll number the steps for me and just kind of like build out the how to. And it's in my voice. I think that's what I've found, like by telling it to make it easier to read instead of asking them to rewrite it.
Yeah.
It stays in my voice. So it sounds like this is how I would tell you to do it if we were talking. And to me, I think that's key because I think that's the unique piece of your voice and how you write that can help you stand out versus just the bland AI verbiage. And so then I'll just copy that, put it on my website and put the video in and then share it. And now I've got a how to on my site that I didn't even have to write. I just had to do it and show somebody one time. So
yeah, that's awesome. So
it's been great for that kind of stuff.
That's great. I know it's so interesting how specificity really matters when you're inputting instructions into AI. It causes you to think about things on a deeper level. So I feel like by nature of having to think about things on a deeper level, I think humans are going to become smarter as a result of AI as well. So yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Well, yeah, thanks for hopping on the show. It was really great to meet you in person at Inbound and really great to have this conversation. And yeah, really appreciate you you coming on to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it too, Travis. It's been awesome talking to you. And so nice to see you at Inbound. And I hope our paths cross sometime soon, either up in Washington where you are or down here in San Diego where I am. It was a pleasure talking to you today.